like a demon.
That was brownish, gray, and white.
A righteous soul temporarily possesses a body.
The Dybbuk box.
This evil thing.
Touché, sir.
The Rougarou.
It has potential to be dangerous.
The Wild Hunt.
There's something large crawling out of the water.
That's just between me and the fae.
Baba Yaga.
I'm Todd.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm Bill.
Welcome to Stranger Happenings Podcast.
It's Todd. If there's thunder, it's Todd. If it's poop, it's any of us.
Boy, I hope you don't put that in the podcast.
Smellers the feller.
Quality content on this podcast.
And all of a sudden, the podcast begins.
So, no check this out. Yesterday, they found two bodies in the river here locally. And, like, one of them was right across our neighborhood, like, over in Ohio side.
Before you continue, should you talk to your lawyer?
No, I'm good.
Okay, just wanted to look out for you, buddy.
And then the other one, it was, like, just downstream a little ways in Ashland, Kentucky, which is only about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes away from here. And they found them both at right about the same time. They haven't released much information, so I don't know if it was connected or anything. You know, I don't know, but it trips me out because it's like every year or two this happens. Although finding two at the same time, I don't recall that happening. But like I used to fish in that river a lot, and nowadays not so much. Now it's just kind of a every now and then thing. You know, maybe a few times a year, but I still go because it's like, you know, just one of the best places really to go around here is, you know, the river. And it's always been like a lingering thought in the back of my mind that, like, you know, I'm going to snag into a body and just like reel it up on the shore.
Yeah.
I'm bad at geography. Is that close to Appalachia?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's right in the heart of Appalachia.
So, yeah. Well, it's Melofimo.
It's Appalachia, sir.
Say
it correctly.
As far as I know, they're both male. Actually, okay, that depends on where you're from. It's Appalachia or Appalachia.
True. That's different very true. Hey,
Jamie, can you hear me good? Should I turn it up?
Fuck you. Pardon my language.
Everybody listening, to all the people listening, have you heard me be mean to Jamie at all this episode? No. Look how hostile she is right off the bat.
No, I'm just curious.
There's that redhead.
Yeah, at least you're wearing clothes tonight. Bill. Thank you for wearing actual pants. We really appreciate it.
Hey, why do you guys keep catching up with me to take my clothes off? I said no.
Hey, Bill, look at this. Now I'm fishing.
You're off camera, dumbass.
No, I'm not.
Your hands weren't showing up for me.
Can you, hold on, can you see it now?
Yes, you're just barely on the edge.
Fuck you.
Like your mentality.
Where I come from, they call that the state map of West Virginia. Because you got panhandles. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. For those that don't know.
All of a sudden really flipped out.
Bill insisted that we turn our cameras on tonight. I think because he wants to catch us in the way that Todd and I caught him during our last episode. But
I was in boxes
and a t-shirt. The joke's on him. Todd and I know better.
The point of this was to see if we would interrupt each other less. But now I'm like, I don't give a fuck if I talk over you very quickly. It's funny. I guest host last night, the people listening, on a podcast called That Does Suit Madam with an E, the podcast about Are You Being Solved? Great experience, and they let us promo Stranger Happenings. And I was like, wow, they don't interrupt as much as we
Very
do.
Very cool.
Maybe we could try the camera technique. And now I'm like, yeah, fuck that already. The vibe is so different with us.
Maybe they just care more about each other's feelings. I just think we don't care.
I don't think you think.
That's just how we roll.
Shut up.
But if you guys would ever listen, thank you, Mr. Brandon. Thank you, Mr. Jeff.
Thank you.
Definitely. I'm going to have to check that episode out and
same.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool.
If you get anyone who watches Are You Being Served, even though it's been off the air for years, highly recommend that podcast.
Okay. Just fodder for us to make fun of Bill with.
I felt like I gave him
sure
a hard time on the last episode.
Just a little bit, maybe? Just a fucking little bit?
You opened the door, though, Bill. How could you not expect us to not just tumble through it with all that is within us? Like,
I hope he texts you tonight.
You can't. Oh my god, no. He won't. It's fine. It's fine.
Oh, I hope he does. I'll encourage it if I have to.
Please don't. I don't need that again.
God, it's like crazy how quick she stopped. Like mid-sentence.
Kryptonite.
Yeah, so how was your guys' weekend? How was your week? You haven't been on here for like 4 days.
I've been super busy working in the yard, like doing some stuff in the garden, getting it going, and you know, got tomatoes and peppers in the ground, some herbs and spices, and getting the flower beds all cleaned up and new flowers put in them, and flowers from last year are being tended to and watered and fed, and you know, all that good noise. Nice. So it's been good.
That's noise. Starting to get a tan.
Nice. I got a sunburn on the back of my neck because I thankfully remembered to put sunscreen everywhere else because we were at we went to a protest at the state capitol this weekend. That was pretty exciting.
Nice.
And just lots of work stuff.
Yay, civil lots rights.
Of writing. Yay, civil rights.
That's not fun. I went to the zoo with one of our listeners, who's my friend, Allison. That
I
was
enjoyed
fun.
Your pictures. Mm-hmm.
Yes. We walked until we wanted to collapse. It was a blast. And I did the podcast like I told you guys about.
Mm-hmm.
And I switched internet providers.
You did switch internet providers.
T-Mobile, please sponsor us.
Internet for all of us. Because,
man, it's a lot better now. and that's about it. I've been promoting us whenever I get the chance, as I know you guys do too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So my thing now is anytime I get food and I give out a tip, I wrap the money around one of our stickers and then hand it to them. And
how many
I feel kind of slimy doing it, you know, but I'm like, well, right? If I give it in the presence of money, maybe, you know, that puts it in a favorable light, you know.
You did the
it
same thing with your phone number, and that didn't work.
It could be worse. You could.
It worked
just
at least twice, Bill. I have four kids.
Oh, you better hope she never listens. So you just told everybody that how you got me is handing me money.
No, handing out a phone number.
Wrapped in money, though. Wrapped in money.
Wrapped in money.
Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do in order to trick a lady into talking to you.
we won't get into that too much, but...
Todd, how'd you get a black eye?
Yeah.
So...
Todd does not have a black eye, for those wondering.
Yet.
Rather me keep teasing and harassing, I'll try to be more concise. What is today's topic?
Today.
Oh, yeah. So we're
going to end our vampiric history series.
We're going to put a stake in the topic.
We're going to put a stake in it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
We're going to cut its heart out, burn it into ashes, make it into a drink, and drink it.
Or we could cut the head off and stuff it full of garlic.
Or we could just finish talking about it.
Or we can finish talking.
Pause.
About it.
Stop.
I was kind of liking this garlic idea.
I want
to. I loved reading it. I was like, this is so interesting that someone thought to do this. So, you know,
Okay, now don't cheat. Should we start with the books?
Well, I
go for it.
I wanted to start with the first appearance of the term vampire in the Oxford English Dictionary. Oh. Is that
what year
okay?
was that? Yes.
So it actually, we are starting with literature that came out about vampires in 1816. However, the term vampire appeared in the Oxford English Dictionary in 1736, following a vampire panic that spread across Eastern Europe, leading to exhumations and anti-vampire rituals. Another.
You said 1736?
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make sure I had it understood right.
Yeah, 1736. And then I have just a little bit more that I want to point out really quick.
Well, go ahead. I want to connect to that when you're done. I'm liking this.
Okay. Like other myths we've talked about, vampires sprang up as a means of being the answer to some natural disasters that were happening at the time. So the vampires were blamed for loss of entire crops, for instances of plagues. The ancient lore of revenants of reanimated human corpses surface as a potential cause to these natural disasters. Villages rallied to explain their mysteries as they exhumed bodies to search for answers, and they discovered bodies that appeared to still have life. Blood coming out of the corners of the mouth, elongated fingernails and hair, and of course science would later dispel these theories completely. As just a natural part of bodily decay. And, of course, we figured out the natural decomposition process. Billiam?
You already brought up one of it points. I was used to say that word revenant, mm-hmm. which was actually used for both ghost and vampires back and forth interchangeably at one point. So a lot of reasons we said, I think last episode, why aren't there many vampire stories like somehow in the middle of between zero and now, 0 AD. The reason is from around the 8th century AD to sometime in the 14th century, in that time period, they began using the term revenant. But it's hard for people to know, looking back, what stories were about vampires, which ones were about ghosts, because a lot of those vampires did have the same abilities as we'll talk about as what we consider a vampire today. So it wasn't really that there was no vampire beliefs in that time period. They just weren't called vampires yet, like you said, up until around 1735. And that's funny because that's what how you brought up too. And I was just trying to reinforce that. So I'm glad you actually talked first.
Yeah, I think it's interesting.
And also the Irish and the Norse also had revenant stories too. But the mm-hmm. word that we use for revenant actually came from Old French.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead, Todd.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that a lot of that sort of stuff, like the farther you go back, you know, it's got different names. And so it's like you find more and more the more you dig once you figure out, you know, what it used to be called. But then not only that, like you were saying, a lot of the traits are shared, you know, similar qualities to like ghosts or poltergeists or, you know, different stuff like that. And, I don't know. I find it fascinating. I wasn't going anywhere with that.
Same.
I was just,
I
fascinates me.
And this is crazy. Like so many different countries had revenant stories, like vampire stories. And they're so similar. Some of the stories, you really can't tell which one or actually probably the same theme they're talking about.
Right,
but that began changing around 1819. That's because there was a book published called, it's actually technically a short story published called The Vampire by John William Polidori. It was wrote as part of a contest against Lord Byron, Mary Shelley, and Percy Shelley.
Of Frankenstein fame.
Yeah, actually the same night.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It's so cool.
Frankenstein came out of the same contest.
And
very cool.
I don't know if anyone else has read it. Do you guys ever read it or listen to it? It's a quick listen on YouTube.
I read some of it, but I actually wrote a synopsis of it.
Oh no!
if we want to go into it,
yeah. If you want to,
So the vampire is viewed as the progenitor of the romantic vampire genre of fantasy fiction. The work is described as the first story successfully to fuse the disparate elements of vampirism into a coherent literary genre. The vampire of the story, Lord Ruthven, is a suave British nobleman, and he meets a man named Aubrey, and the two decide to travel Europe together. And I don't want to give too much away outside of that, because the story twists and turns. The men part ways and come back together. Ruthven does have some, he coincides with some interesting occurrences within the story. But
yes,
people don't seem to realize that he could be the source of these occurrences.
Yeah, he's super charismatic, as
he is super charismatic. Of vampires today. And then he kind of ends the story on an asshole note. I'm just gonna, yeah. He ends the story on an asshole note. Pardon my language, but that's how I felt.
Interesting.
Now, in
he
this
doesn't
portion,
follow bro I have not code. Read it.
Okay, there's a few things that are interesting about this version of a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
He can die. However, if he dies, if you bury him, he will come back to life on the next full moon.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
What else? He had super strength, of course. He drank blood. Mm-hmm. He could change shape. Mm-hmm. Or I should say, into creatures.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they actually gave him his own.
He was charismatic. He was charismatic too. So I feel like that's a pretty standard aspect of vampiric lore.
Well,
especially in modern times.
Oh,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
For people to know, there was another Lord Ruthven, mm-hmm. Ruthven, in an 1816 novel, mm-hmm. which is not connected. The character was based on Lord Byron. They used that name mm-hmm. because there was a clan Ruthven, and it was by a former lover of Lord Byron who was trying to make him look bad.
Mm-hmm. And I got the impression from my research that that Polidori kind of took the idea sort of from Lord Byron, but like,
yeah, it's odd,
but greatly expanded on it. But it was that was fine. Well, like
in a way,
that
though,
didn't bother Lord Byron.
Yeah, he actually based the character on Augustus Darvel from right. Byron's story, A Fragment of a Novel.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there was a second edition that never got published where he changed the name because of all these reasons to Lord Strongmore.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no one knows why it did not get published.
And just to kind of back up what I said, The Vampire was first published in April 1819 by Henry Colburn in New Monthly Magazine. It was falsely attributed as a tale by Lord Byron, and that was despite denials by Byron and Polidori. The authorship went unclarified, and in the following issue, Polidori wrote a letter to the editor explaining that though the groundwork is certainly Lord Byron's, its development is mine. It was first published in book form by Sherwood, Neely, and Jones in London, Paternoster Row in 1819 under the title The Vampire, A Tale, and it was 84 pages.
And funny thing is, like you said, Lord Byron always stood up for John Polidori and said, no, he wrote it, not me. And remember, it's a book about vampires. Can you guys guess, though, how Lord Byron died? Through unsuccessful blood leeching.
You know, maybe it was because Lord Byron was actually a vampire.
Do you guys know what the second vampire book was called? If you don't, I don't blame you, because it's insanely hard to find any info on.
Are you talking about the Black Vampire?
Yes, A Legend of Saint Domingo.
Domingo. I also have a synopsis of it as
well. That'd be great, because it's so confusing to try to explain this one. Now, this one, guys, Jamie can explain as good as she wants or feels the desire to, because you can't find a copy of it, to my knowledge. I can't find a synopsis on YouTube, even. I can't find any audio on it. I can find almost nothing on this book at all. And after Jamie gives the synopsis, we'll gladly explain why.
I thought I found a digitized copy of it. Did I
know? Yeah, I even found the ISB number, but then not much. I looked for it more than once, and I'd say I had it. Then when I click on it, it's not actually there.
I got it. Right?
Of course you do. I've tried.
Is that it? I'll have to.
She is a librarian, Bill. I mean.
Oh, guess what? Now it came up. Maybe it's.
She's so flexing funny. Her muscles.
Well, guys, I would have read it ahead of time. Then.
So.
Of the four books we're going to talk about, this is the only one I've never read.
Oh, okay. This one was super interesting to me. It's an American short story published in 1819 under the pseudonym Uriah Derrick D'Arcy. It is credited as the first black vampire story, the first comedic vampire story. I did not sense the comedy in it, but maybe I'm not funny. The first
two separate themes.
Right. The first vampire book by an American author, and perhaps the first anti-slavery short story, which I thought was interesting. The story is told from the point of view of Mr. Anthony Gibbons, and he begins the story recalling his family history. And it begins with the arrival of his family on a slave ship, and everyone dies after being sold, with the exception of one young boy who is sold to a Mr. Person, who kills the boy and throws him into the ocean. The body washes ashore and rises in the moonlight. Mr. Person tries to kill the boy again and decides to burn him on a pyre. But instead, the boy, through, I guess, super strength, throws Person in the fire instead. Person does survive, but he is badly injured. And then you meet his wife, Euphemia. And she goes through some other husbands, and then she meets a man by the name of Prince. And then her life very much turns on its head. And towards the end of the book, you come to realize that Prince is more than likely the young boy, but grown up, or that was my understanding. Mr. Anthony Gibbons is his descendant, and Gibbons, which this is funny because of what we were talking about before we started recording, Gibbons is revealed to have bowel troubles, which he fears could be the start of his cravings as a vampire.
I thought that was so strange.
Right? I'm like, what makes you think that that's...
Well, I think a lot of people wrote vampire. About that back then. Like, remember Gulliver's Travels? He's obsessed with bowels.
True. And I have some stuff at the end about modern vampires. And once I read that, I was like, either we're all reading this, or there's somewhere in the lore about having bowel problems before you become a vampire.
Okay. So. Just for the record, I'm going off of those so far. Amazon has it. Barnes & Noble said they did. Clicked it. They don't have it. Books A Million said they did. Clicked it. They don't have it. IndieBound said they had. So they had it. Clicked it. They didn't have it.
That book is in the public domain. It's somewhere.
Amazon does have it, and the Cleveland Library, if you live in Ohio, has two copies. But I'm just amazed, though, for being what it is. Oh, it's also an anti-capitalist novel. Maybe that's why it's hard to find. It's insane, though, how hard it was to find, considering. Like on YouTube, everything else we looked up, I could type in the name or the author's name. I have so many versions of it I could find. I found two for sure references to it other than telling people to read the book on YouTube. Neither one was in English. They were in Spanish and Italian. So yeah, I thought that was kind of odd. And now this version, though, if you guys noticed, he has different powers than most vampires. Mr. Anthony Gibbons is only half vampire, so apparently humans and vampires can have babies. In most versions of vampires, before this book and after, they humans and vampires can't have kids together, and vampires just can't have kids, period. Also, this version of vampires, they can resurrect the dead. And often, though, in this book, he'd resurrect the dead just to kill them again. I guess when you have nothing else to do for fun.
Yeah, he was super bored in his life, which is fine. You know, it happens to
Oh, yeah, I just thought it was unique. I do want to read it. I still plan on reading it. I recommend everyone read it because it's only the second English vampire story ever written that we know about. And like I said, it was probably the first anti-slavery story.
I'd say being bored is kind of a common theme because that
plays yeah, in, like, I Lestat. Think so.
Yes.
Like Lestat, you know, which, I mean, it makes sense, I guess, if you're immortal, basically, you know, you just kind of get tired of everything.
Funny you mention Lestat, because when you think of Lestat, we think of a bold immortal who wants people to be around and kind of homosexual erotica. Am I wrong?
I found it. No, you're not wrong.
I mean, kind of. Yeah, yeah.
Where do you think that theme comes from? Carmilla.
Sounds like it's coming from
1872. Yeah. You got something to say?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
It's Carmilla, which was 1872 book by Sheridan Le Fanu, which actually he's Irish, even though I would never have guessed that by the name.
Oh, yeah. Carmilla was French.
Yeah, I thought it was French, too.
Yeah, I thought it was.
It was very revolutionary for the time because she was a lesbian vampire, but they never outright said it.
Different strokes for different folks, Bill.
That's true. I'm just going to behave for once. Jamie or Todd, what if you guys want to read the plot summary? You guys do much better than I do.
I can.
I do not have
Again, the plot summary. I have a brief synopsis.
The librarian's awesome at this. This one was much better than The Vampire. This story went on a little too long in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It was very worldsy. However, though, if you're going to only listen, if you're only going to read one of these, I'd read this one.
Yeah, I felt like even though it was wordy, the plot was more developed in this one.
Yes.
Does that make sense? That's how I felt.
And I'll explain that more after that synopsis.
Carmilla is a gothic novel. It predates, I just want to point this out, it predates Bram Stoker's Dracula by 26 years, and it was published in a serial known as The Dark Blue. The story is narrated by a young woman who is preyed upon by a female vampire named Carmilla, later to be revealed as Mircalla, the Countess of Karnstein, which is in Austria. That's where this takes place. The character, as Bill said, is the prototypical example of the lesbian vampire expressing romantic desires toward the protagonist, but it's not squarely pointed out. The story is presented as part of the casebook of Dr. Hesselius, whose departures from medical orthodoxy rank him as the first occult detective in literature. A teenage Lorraine narrates, beginning with her childhood in a picturesque castle amid an extensive forest in Styria, however you want to say that, again, Austria, where she lives with her father. At the age of 6, she has a vision of a very beautiful visitor to her bedchamber. She later claims to have been punctured in her breast, although no wound is found. 12 years later, as Laura is...
Laurie?
I think it's Laura. Mourns the loss of a potential friend whom dies mysteriously. I say potential because her father tells her that this girl around her age is coming to visit with her father, her own father, and he arrives without his daughter, and they find out that she died. However, a carriage accident outside of Laura's home unexpectedly brings a girl of Laura's age into the family's care, and her name is Carmilla. Both of them, Laura and Carmilla, recognize each other from a dream they both had when they were young. And it it goes on from there. It twists and it turns, and...
And I don't think we're yeah. rooting for you when we tell you that Carmella is the vampire. It's going to be obvious to the reader of modern...
Right.
...times, I should say. Mm-hmm. Maybe what isn't... I think sometimes people back then didn't see stuff the same in a novel, possibly because they didn't have as many novels and stories to read or still new ideas. That makes sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is...
They didn't have the tropes.
Yeah, this today. Is like a... This genre is just starting out. So you're exactly yeah. like you said, there's no tropes yet. Like, this is a brand new story. This is a new storyline. Everything in this is its own. Like, it doesn't have something previous that people have already read to know what they're looking for, if you will.
I kind of feel that LaFanu read Polidori's The Vampire.
Yeah.
Because in some ways, Carmilla had the same obsessiveness over her friends, but cold hardness to everyone else that Lord Ruthven had.
Yeah. Yes, I would agree.
But she's scarier in some ways.
Yeah. And she was also... She can also die, right? Wasn't it the same trope?
Yeah, she can die.
Yeah.
But I don't think she can come back on the full moon.
Oh, okay.
They never explained that fully.
Mm-hmm.
But she could shape change into a wolf. And they actually a cat, usually. I think they mentioned a wolf, too. They explained yeah, that a lot better cat. Than they did in The Vampire. I want to say in The Vampire, they alluded to it briefly. And right in this one, she will mm-hmm. come up to people as a cat, then suddenly turn into a human, and vice versa.
Dun, dun, dun.
She was more of a stalker in this one. And Lou Ruthven and The Vampire was just, he'd get it right over with.
Right.
And you guys are both laughing. I'm afraid of what I'm doing.
I felt like Carmilla to me was like creepy. Like if that girl showed up at first, I've been like, oh, this is cool. This is my friend. But then after a while, I've been like, okay, you're too weird for me. You're obsessed with me. Go away. But Laura is so isolated. Maybe she's like super into it. Agreed. Todd might be laughing at me, because at one point I was like rubbing my eye and my eyes went in different directions, so Todd saw a new side of me. You're on mute. Unmute
nothing
yourself.
But the highest quality here speak. At Stranger Happenings.
Shit. Yeah, don't mind me. I'm just over here laughing at myself, you know? Shit. No, I...
Oops.
When I had made a comment when Bill was talking about her like shape changing, and I found it funny, you know. So I'm over here laughing, and, you know, having a good old time over here by myself. So,
and I'm just laughing at Todd's face.
Oh my
because
God.
That's the thing. If you've ever Zoomed with us. Bill is doing exactly what he does on Zoom. So while Todd and I can see each other's faces, I cannot see Bill's face to know
what... I'm notorious for this. I always lay back and let everyone else stick it up. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's funny.
It's my theme. I can't help it. I get the lean.
Oh, Todd's camera has been disabled due to slow internet connection, but his video is still recording, so watch yourself, bud.
Well, Todd is going through a thunderstorm. Hopefully everything will be okay.
Yes, hopefully it's okay.
Yeah.
I also want to point out that I dismissed a good Are You Being Silver joke since I was on that podcast last night. I could have said she turns into a pussy. Because if you watch Are You Being Silver show, mm-hmm. Mrs. Slocum always calls her cat that. It always freaks out newcomers. Now,
clearly they don't know.
Like, I really want to.
When did that freak them out? Because I feel like that's such a typical word for a cat prior to like 1950, if not later.
It was 1970s through the 90s.
Yeah, I was going to say definitely
it
was, like.
It always freaked out new people who met her on the show. I used to love it.
People are.
But I want to explain Carmella a little bit more, but I kind of. Feel like we can't until we bring up the next book, which, in my opinion, greatly stole from Carmella and the Vampire.
Are you talking about Bram Stoker?
I am talking about that mm-hmm. author, who's pretty much a thief.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about that?
Bold. Bold accusation, sir.
He is. Yeah, I think it's a bold accusation. Because you have to think, Who knows what he had access to? Who knows what any of them actually had access to? Like, no, it's these, still right.
Well, you can think about
early
it,
to mid 1800s, so it's not like you have access to. It's not like now. Like, they're not popping on the internet three stories, looking for stuff. You know,
all three stories. Right.
Like
are
the
told,
most common book to read was the Bible.
Exactly. Well,
but you got to think though. It's what all three stories are told in perspective of journal entries and logs of different people who interacted with the vampire, usually someone that the vampire wanted to be friends with or was obsessed with.
Mm-hmm.
All three vampires were a person of mystery, of nobility.
Think all three of them stole from each other. That's what I really think. Like,
Well, not possible, because the other, unless there's time travel.
Well, I mean, well, I guess not the first one, but I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like we would need to do, like, an in-depth look at what other literary trends are going on at the time to really know, like, was this just a trend because the other authors were reading vampire books, or was this a trend throughout fictional literature at the time, you know?
Well, you got another too, though. Like, yeah. Carmela and Dracula both pretended to be somebody who's a descendant of who they actually were.
True.
There was actually a short story that was supposed to be the prologue to Dracula. Mm. Can you guess where it was set? In Styria.
Mm-hmm.
And it was he met a female vampire.
Interesting.
And Dracula told him the creatures too. About the whole vampires turning into creatures became more common in this time period. And which led to more of the funny bringing werewolves back, which maybe that could be another episode someday.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of found it odd. Oh, and I want to, and also the stake through the heart was mentioned in Carnella and cutting the head off. Which are granted themes before and after.
Right.
But I like how that's something that has definitely stayed throughout all the stories.
Yes. But
what is different, though, if I remember correctly, in Carmilla, I don't remember anything about crucifixes affecting the vampire like they do in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Well, part of that is because Bram Stoker was extremely religious, or makes at least sense. During part of his life. I think he went through like a, I could be totally wrong, but I thought I remembered him like going away from the faith at some point and then coming back to it. And like the church he's married in and attended is like a historical marker in Dublin. So it definitely mattered to him. So that could be part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And it could be coming out of the lore too. Cause that was the thing too. The whole like, cutting off the head, that was a part of the lore prior to the literature. So that could also be part of why we're seeing similarities, too.
Yeah.
I don't really know why I'm defending it, but...
But and also, though, I guess in his defense, though, everyone has stolen from Carmela.
True.
Because there's so many books where she's in it. And there's three different comic book series. There was one, two... Multiple films, not even called Carmilla. A lot of them are just different names, but they take Carmilla and put it into a different vampire movie, but it's still Carmilla. There's actually at least six songs about her.
Mm-hmm.
There's an opera about her.
Mm-hmm.
Nine other rock songs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Japanese lesbian magazine called Carmilla.
You know.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, agreed. One thing that I thought was interesting too is that in Dracula, dies. Whereas Carmilla doesn't die at the end, does she? I don't remember.
It's funny.
I don't remember.
In the synopsis I read, it said she did. Yet I actually did the audiobook of it, but I listened to it slowly to make sure I didn't miss anything. I don't remember her dying. More like she just disappeared. But what's ironic is in that version, though, Laura does die right before the journal is published.
Mm-hmm.
And also, though, for those of you who like video games and also Netflix series, Carmilla from Castlevania is based on this Carmilla from the book.
Oh, and okay.
They named her Carmilla, but Carmilla was also a vampire in the 1980 Doctor Who serial.
That was kind of the thing, too, was, like, she had three or four different names, even just within that short story.
Yes.
And it was just from her, you know, being a vampire, living a long time, and killing people. So she's got to cover her tracks.
Did you guys ever watch True Blood?
No, I never did.
Todd, you watch True Blood? There's a special vampire tale in True Blood. In True Blood, the entire world knows vampires exist, and there's a kind of like an odd coexistence going on.
Right.
And I forget this, but apparently season 2, episodes 5 and 6, there's a special hotel built for vampires. Hotel Ooh. Carmella.
Interesting.
Yes, like I said, she's in Castlevania. Mm-hmm. And quite a few other video games, actually.
Ooh, very cool.
And
is
that, in Destiny 2, there's a set of weapons called the Constantine Amulets that give you the poke of Vampire's Caress. And Constantine is supposed to be the family Carmella's from in the story. So yeah, she's influenced so much stuff from the 1860s to now. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, we're talking about Bram Stoker, so much of it comes back to that. Plus, realistically, we have to talk too much about Bram Stoker's Dracula, because I'm not sure how you can be alive today and speak English and not have it been brought up probably 35, 35 hundred times in your life. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm not mad at Bram Stoker because
I'm not mad at him. I just kind of feel bad that the other ones don't get credit, I should say. I probably worded it wrong. I apologize.
No, it's not even that. I don't know. He took their stories and he built off of them. You know, he had his.
I know.
He had his vampire hunter. He, you know, kind of it. I sort of feel like he took that found footage approach because he's using, you know, letters and diary entries and newspaper articles, which is found footage of the time, if you will, just drawing weird parallel, but that's
shared and firm.
You know, that's what I think. So I actually pulled some stuff, maybe way too much stuff, about modern vampires, because there are people in our world
Can I say one more thing real quick?
Yes.
I do believe at the very end there's a good chance that Bram Stoker was familiar with Sheridan Le Fanu's book Carmilla, because Sheridan died while Bram Stoker was born.
Mm-hmm.
They were from this. Sheridan died in Dublin, and Bram Stoker was already alive in Dublin. And since Sheridan was an author in the time, and Bram Stoker at the time was a personal assistant of Sir Henry Irving, who's an actor. And he worked for a movie as a business manager for a theater. There's a chance they could have been in the same circle, per se. That's all I have to say on that now. I'm shutting up.
You said that Stoker was young, though, when LaFeu died. Or was he not? Were they adults same time?
He was in his mid-20s.
Okay, yeah, that was possible.
So there's a chance they could have crossed paths.
Yeah, they could have been running in the same circle.
I never looked at it more because, truthfully, up until tonight, I never realized Le Fanu was Irish because I assumed he was French.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the last name.
Here we are.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I apologize. Sorry, people. Sorry, Jamie.
You're fine.
Todd, please put your pants back on. We know you don't have them on.
Wow.
At least we can't see it, but we know.
At least I turn my camera off when I do.
That's true.
Touché.
At least you have the
decency. Point for Todd. Jamie, what were you going to say, though?
I have a lot to say about modern vampires. Because
please do, because it's awesome.
There are people who believe that they are vampires. Interestingly enough, it's not necessarily how they are portrayed in literature. They do drink is a strong word, but they do consume blood. However, I'm going to preface this all by saying science shows that drinking human blood would cause an iron overdose called hemochromatosis. So bear that in mind before we go into this. Please don't start drinking blood. So,
you know what? If we have to tell you that, you should probably talk to your doctor.
You know, groups of people all over the world identify as vampires. And though a lot of people, I think, would associate vampirism with parasitic relationships, similar to what we talked about in these works of literature. It's not all about death and destruction. Daily Catherine South, who is considered the queen vampire of a coven in Austin, Texas, describes today's vampires as falling into several categories, or personally, I know of two categories, and this says several, but they highlight two. They're sanguine, or those who consume blood, and then there are energetic, so those that feed off of energy, if you will. Okay. Daly, along with her husband Logan South, lead a group of quote-unquote awakened vampires, people who have come to the realization, understanding, and have developed symptoms of vampirism and require an outside source of human energy to maintain their own health and well-being. And there are similar niche groups sprouting up in lots of places. Modern vampires get their sustenance, and I believe this was described by Daly. I'm sure there are other ways, or maybe not. Get their sustenance from inch-long incisions made by a sterilized scalpel on a fleshy part of the body that hopefully doesn't scar. While the vampire may suck it up from the source, medically trained personnel usually perform the procedure. Apparently, there is paperwork involved, or can be. Donors give not just consent to the act, but they also provide health certificates proving the absence of bloodborne diseases.
That was
another thing. Yeah, I think a lot of people would associate quote-unquote feeding as being like a sensual or sexual thing, but there are people who don't see it as a sexual act and more see it as a sacred ritual. There are people, like I said, this article that I pulled this from quotes that vampires number in the thousands worldwide, and with varying demographics of class, race, and gender, and increasingly there are more and more researchers studying them.
Ooh, I found something on that. Just real fast. I saw the Atlanta Vampire Alliance, which is a house for, quote, real vampires, conducted surveys that found there are at least 5,000 people in the United States who identify as vampires. And there's a large amount of those are in New Orleans, but not all.
Yeah, there's actually, I believe, like a vampire, I guess I would call it like a convention.
Every year,
and like a ball that's a part of it, or that's what I've heard from someone.
Isn't Sebastian there?
Yeah, I believe so. So apart from the societal taboo of just you're sucking someone's blood, doing this can carry a range of diseases. You can contract hepatitis, HIV, parasites, and hazardous amounts of iron, like I mentioned. Modern vampires often insist that their cravings are not voluntary. They say life would, of course, be much easier without them, but this is something they're born with. And some say that real vampirism should not be confused with blood fetishism, because it's not necessarily sexual. Like I said, it's not like a fetish, but they need it to sustain life. Insiders refer to the realization of one's vampiric nature as an awakening. It isn't like the dramatic process often portrayed in movies, and one can't be turned through vampire bites. Turned is in quotation marks, I want to say. Well, I was doing air quotes, I should say that. For most vampires, it's a gradual and frightening process, normally manifesting itself in puberty or possibly following trauma. And through trial and error, vampires learn what curbs their hunger. There wasn't much more explanation of that process.
If you feel this covers you, what we're talking right now, this describes you, you should probably consult your doctor.
He might want to.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Or your local vampire house, apparently. Sorry.
Now, should we explain who Father Sebastian is?
Let me keep going, because I'm almost...
Okay, sorry. I'm
still talking about, like, the cause. No one knows what causes hematomania, the craving to drink blood. Those who experience it describe it as an intense, thirst-like sensation. And it's similar to an addiction with withdrawal-like symptoms. Animal blood or rare steaks may act as substitutes, but for most, nothing beats fresh human blood. Frequency and amount vary, but for many, a few teaspoons once a week is enough. This, naturally, is supplemented with a normal diet. After all, real vampires are also human. Most people are able to maintain healthy energy levels through diet, exercise, social interactions, and the occasional cappuccino. This is a quote from Mertukas, a vampire. I believe he was in Atlanta as well. And he says, we've had to develop alternative means to sate our energy needs. And then...
Wow.
Yeah. And then, like I said, not all drink blood. The community generally acknowledges two types of vampires. The blood vampires, the sanguinarians, like I mentioned earlier, and the psychic or energy vampires who drain, quote-unquote, life force, a.k.a. prana or chi, if you're familiar with those terms, rather than blood from others.
Funny you say that, because my four kids drain the absolute soul out of me on a regular basis. I love them. But,
well,
man.
Because clearly they are psychic vampires.
Yeah.
The greatest psychic vampire is Colin Robinson from What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes! What's up, dog?
What? If for anyone who's not watched What We Do in the Shadows, we highly recommend that great vampire comedy.
Please go watch it. It is amazing.
And easily, the best and yet funniest example of a psychic vampire.
Truly. Yes. I love Colin. I love Nadja and Laszlo and their weird love. And Nandor.
And Guillermo?
Yes. I love the actor who plays Guillermo. He's so good.
And I just want to bring up quickly the Rod Ferrell, the vampire killer from the vampire clan called in Kentucky. Folks, please stop using that as an example of vampire stuff. They were playing a role-playing Dungeons & Dragons type vampire game. They apparently were heavily on drugs and all very easy to trick or put into a fantasy land.
Damn.
To believe that their buddy they knew and they watched grow up was a 500-year-old vampire.
Right.
They were just stupid people.
Must be some good drugs. Like, what are they on?
Right.
Todd, do you know that story?
No.
Oh, there's a documentary on Netflix.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called, but it's about a killing. I think it happened in Florida, but it actually started in Kentucky. They try to blame it on the dungeon. Was it something like Dungeons & Dragons, but it's called Vampire the Masquerade?
It's similar. Okay.
They try to blame it on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know what it is. Yeah.
Rod Ferrell is actually the youngest person in Florida to ever be in death row at the time. But they now change it to a life sentence. And I have watched documentaries on it. I've watched interviews of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like he really believes he's a vampire at the time. And like I said, the drugs must have been great.
Maybe.
Some serious drugs.
Like bath salts or something.
Yeah,
I'm trying to find the name of the documentary.
Like, not to veer off subject, but there are a few instances, like when the I think they're like 12 or maybe 14. A couple little girls tried to kill their friend. They stabbed her like 12 times and left her for dead because they were convinced that they were going to appease the Slender Man. And with the killing of their friend, they would be allowed into his mansion in the woods. And they were picked up like a mile down the road. And thankfully, like, very thankfully, the little girl was found and they were able to, get her to the hospital in time that she's okay. But, you know, and like definitely, drugs were not involved. It was just kind of like, you know, some sort of a really weird mindset, maybe a little bit of schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. I don't know, something weird going on there, but that's kind of like what it makes me think of.
Wasn't there a similar story where the girl actually died and I think they ended up deciding that the girls are just using it as an excuse to
that wasn't brutalize the vampire, their
friend.
Though? I believe that was
maybe
that was
I don't know.
Case.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I think that was also a Slender Man thing. I don't think it was a vampire.
It very well could have been. Well, yeah.
Well, unfortunately, if you do enough digging, there've been a few of these cases.
Yeah,
of it's, Slender Man or of vampires.
Probably both. But
there've
been a few, and also. And some of these stories, people change it to fit whatever narrative they want to tell.
Right.
Oh, sure.
There was a Norwegian death metal band who I want to say in the 90s killed somebody for satanic reasons, wanted to make themselves look cool if they could sell more records. Mm-hmm. And I've read a few reports that there was a vampire killing. Mm. But if you look at all the stuff, they definitely did for satanic reasons because they thought it would help their sales because people think they're more hardcore that way and legit.
Right.
Not even making that up. But I found no actual substance that makes it believable that it had anything to do with vampires. Mm-hmm. They didn't believe in vampires. They weren't trying to be vampires.
Was that like a Norwegian rock band, I think?
Yes. It was a Norwegian rock band, I think in 92 or 93.
I'm familiar with the story. Yeah.
But yeah, I've noticed a few people have tried to say it was a vampire killing. No, that was not a vampire killing.
No.
But the Rod Fair one was. Maybe once we post this and people can listen to it, we can post some of the links on YouTube of the better documentaries about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a lot of them don't have good names, so it'd be easier just to post them in our group.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
In our group. Bill, when you kill Todd and I'm going to leave like a journal that details your life as a vampire.
I'm not going to kill you.
It's a vampire.
I'll have someone else do it. I'm lazy.
No matter what, I'll make it out like it's a vampire.
I won't even sit up while we record. What would make you think I'd go to another state to harm somebody?
I have a little bit more, and then let's talk about this like Sebastian guy. So the last person I was talking about, an interview with them, Martukas, that's how I'm going to say it. I don't know if that's correct. He says that real vampires have existed as an organized community for nearly 30 years and in solitary for far longer. There is no test for vampirism. Everyone is welcome, and it's a remarkably diverse crowd, ranging from doctors, lawyers, soldiers, scientists, artists, teachers, and parents of all ages, genders, ethnicities, and religions. Some choose to align with like-minded folks through courts and houses, though the majority, he says, do not. If there's
I feel like... Mm-hmm. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I feel like at this point in this episode, we should apologize to the people. We definitely need to finish this story because, we need a conclusion. But we don't have the same energy on part three because, as we'll explain this, you can hear all these people today that believe this stuff. I'm sorry. I'll take the blame. Don't have to hate those two. If you believe you're a vampire... Unless you can actually prove it, like you could do some magic feat, you're an idiot. Or you need help.
Dang.
Either
don't be so
stupid
harsh.
Or you need mental health.
Damn, Bill. Just
harshing the
bars.
And don't worry, guys. I have a special climax for the end that I kind of saved and didn't really tell anybody about.
Is that why your hands are sticky?
I brought napkins. Don't worry.
I'm not trying to be mean. I have a hard time. Somebody who goes out in sunlight, who says coffee can substitute the blood, who has an exception for every role of vampire, thinks they're a vampire.
Right.
No, that's just the point, though, is have you watched these documentaries on these, Jamie?
No, because I don't care.
No, they actually, I have before, like, when I was bored, they actually believe this. They're not just being sarcastic. That's their excuse.
That like coffee can replace blood.
Let's say Martutius or Martuchius will believe that and not believe that he says it as a joke, but he gets three new followers who say, oh, well, he says that. That makes sense. I'm a vampire, but the coffee's taken its place.
Then God damn it, I'm a vampire.
I've watched some of these people being, I have watched interviews with some of these people and they truly believe they're vampires. That's why I'm kind of quiet this episode. I'm almost mind I'm thinking back to some of the interviews I have watched. And the only one who seems intelligent is that Father Sebastian.
Yeah.
I truly feel like at least some of them are only in it for the aesthetic, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, if you're only in it for the aesthetic, I agree. Like, you're not like straight. Go ahead.
They want to look cool. They want to catch some emo chick girlfriends and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. If you don't really believe you're a vampire, but they don't believe they're a vampire. Some of these people really believe they're a vampire, and they're just finding ways to not drink the blood.
I'm sure some do, but
the people you're saying don't believe it. Actually, they just want a scene. They're in the fantasy of it.
Yeah, but I feel like those are the, you know, the same types that would follow the guy that truly believes. He is one.
Right.
You know?
That he is one. Yeah. Yes. Right. I would agree.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I have nothing against anybody who wants to be in the fantasy of it. That's cool. I'm not judging you.
It's I'm like just having a good dungeon master.
Really thinks they're going to live 300 years. Right. Yeah.
It is like having a really good dungeon master.
But if you really think you're going to live
that
extra long.
Take that however you will, friends.
That's a different type of dungeon master.
I promise I'm almost done. I promise I'm almost done. I just felt like I would be remiss if I didn't talk about modern vampires because
No, it's okay.
I know friends who are obsessed with it, and it is what it is. I'm one of those people, if that's really what you want to do, go ahead and do it. If as long as everyone is cool with it and knows what's happening and is consenting, whatever.
I should explain.
Shame on this podcast. Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm not shaming the people. Like
I know.
I should say the ones that I've known a few. And I should say those are the ones I'd be shaming.
I even said early on, like, someone pointed out that it's not a fetish, which...
Because I've had ones who tell me that they really are going to live 1,000 years and stuff like that. Like, people that I know have said that to me.
Believe what they're going to believe. So, the person writing this article goes on to say that one thing real vampires do seem to have in common is they are reluctant to tell the world about who and what they are. Vampires have carved out their identity using very little of the pop cultural representation, which I don't know that I agree with that. It seems like some of them are totally in the pop culture representation.
Exactly.
And the interesting thing to me was I felt like they were implying that they're persecuted, and it's like, I can see it, I guess you are, but... you chose that lot in life.
We didn't cover it, but it became illegal to do vampire hunts and technically to dig up corpses to kill them for vampires. That became illegal in the 1700s. So they technically, if they were being prosecuted at one point, they now have legal protections.
That depends on where at. Like what region?
And part of it was like a health thing. Was they were spreading disease by digging them up and.
Here's the funny part. Believe it or not, they actually helped stop the spread of tuberculosis by doing vampire hunts because they were burning bodies.
Right. And they were avoiding each other.
And distrustful of outsiders and all that.
But. And distrustful of outsiders.
Exactly.
Which is funny. The fear of vampires actually helped stop tuberculosis from being a worse pandemic.
But I have a story from well past the 1700s.
I have one quote and then I'm done.
Absolutely.
And I want to be done. I'm sorry. I'm going to finish
this. Go for it.
This person, this vampire, says, "Had they called themselves something else entirely, their reception may have developed quite differently. Regardless, any mention of their special health issues is almost always treated with suspicion by medical professionals. And the inclusion of the word vampire only intensifies it. And that was what I was saying about their persecution. Anyways, yeah. Todd, tell us your story. I'm sorry if you guys can hear my cat.
You're good.
For some reason, he is having a moment.
Well, he likes that Carmilla story because she turned into a cat.
Yeah, he's like,
I didn't know if Bill wanted to talk about the Sebastian.
Yes, I will, but first let's explain more. Thank for the record, sure, if vampires exist, say you exist. Prove it to us. There's so many of us people out there that are into this stuff. You'd be fine. Nobody would come after you because we would love that there's proof of the occult, proof of magic,
go proof find of Bill afterlife. And bite him.
Don't have to bite me then. I'll be your agent. I'll be your agent.
I feel like
I'm Jewish. I'm good with money.
If there's a real true one out there somewhere, I feel like it's living in a, you know, crypt or under a pyramid in Egypt or something. Yeah. You know, it's
or they're saying, like super rich and they have an amazing castle.
Or, sure.
If you're alive for a few hundred years and you're not doing better than we are financially, you're doing something wrong.
I feel bad for you.
Do you want me to like cut your head off and stuff it full of garlic? Because that was one of the ways we read about getting rid of vampires. I'll gladly do that for you.
I wasn't trying to be a hater to anyone into this stuff. I apologize. It's just like I just don't believe that you want to hide it. You if you're really that powerful, flaunt it.
Flaunt what you got.
So, okay, I'll tell my thing, though. Father Sebastian refers to himself as a fangsmith. He's a formal dental assistant turned specialized vampire fang maker. For anybody who's into this world, whether it's not for Halloween, but if you actually take it seriously, this is the man you go to. He travels the entire globe, going to specialized vampire balls and parties and conventions, and he will custom fit fangs to you, to your mouth, and send them to you. He has different types of models and sets, like the Nosferatu is one type, I believe, and those more like the Lestat type. For people that are into this, he is the best of the best for making fangs.
Mm-hmm.
He'll make them for your mouth, certain types you can wear all day long. You're not going to have any damage or cut your cheeks and all that. So I just wanted to mention, because we mentioned Father Sebastian earlier, and if you're into this stuff at all, because like I said, I've done a lot of research on it, he's the man.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he's a genius, you know? He found a niche and played to it, and, you know, he's making his money.
Utilizing it,
He calls himself a fangsmith. I have to give that guy credit. No matter where you stand on this, that man is amazing at business.
For sure. And that I forgot. That was one thing too that I was reading about. There is a like vampire store in New Orleans. I believe his fangs sell there.
No, he visits.
Okay, he visits there then.
Yeah, and he does technically, they sell them there, but go ahead.
They claim that Hollywood sends them stuff and like gets them to
for movies.
Yeah, they have them look over stuff and authenticate it, I think was the word used.
That's true.
Make sure it looks authentic and realistic and yada yada.
Yeah, he really is the best, they say, in the world. And you can send him measurements and stuff, but he recommends seeing you for fittings. So people actually will fly to New Orleans when he's at that store to meet with him. Well, people will meet him in Paris. There's a few other places like that he goes to, and people in this world know where he's going to be and when he's going to be there.
Jokes on whomever goes.
It costs hundreds of dollars.
He's an energy vampire.
Oh, I'm sure
that's right.
Takes your money and your life force.
No, I believe if someone says he's a vampire, that's believable. I think he's got a great way to travel the planet. People come to him; they expect to see all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's how you would do it.
The only living vampire.
Genius.
He'd be the genius one. So I have nothing against them. It's just the people that, I don't know, the ones I've met, I should say.
If you're gonna do it, the ones
in the documentary, like the Rod Ferrell one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've met people very similar to those guys, unfortunately.
If you're gonna do it, capitalize on it.
Yeah. So Todd, what was your story?
Okay, well, so I have a couple. First, I want to go back in time a little bit. We're going to backtrack to March of 1892. And this is in America. This happens in, let me see, it's a little town called Exeter in Rhode Island, and there's a young girl named Mercy Brown.
Oh, this is a good
so
one.
I'm just going to kind of summarize instead of trying to read the whole thing to you. But so basically, the small town of Exeter was suffering through a wave of tuberculosis. Lots of locals had perished over several years. It was about, I don't know, 5 to 10 year time span. I couldn't pin that down. But so Mercy Brown, let's see, first her mother died, then her older sister died, then she died. She was only 19 years old, and she passes away on January 19th of 1892. And then it wasn't much longer, or maybe he already had it. I think maybe her brother already had tuberculosis, but he was fighting it off. Yeah, that's what it was. So he even went to Colorado for a few months to, you know, because they thought that like the clean mountain air would cure it. So he goes there for a few months, and you know, nothing really happens for him, and he gets homesick. So he goes back home, and shortly thereafter, in March, he passes away. So only the father is left, and other people in the town are also still dying. It's just, you know, it's really taking its toll. And the townspeople decide, they know what's going on. They decide one of the Brown family is a vampire. And so at first, George was against it, the father. But I guess there was other family, like cousins and aunts and uncles and neighbors, and they talked him into it. So first they dig up the mother and the older sister, and they're just bones at that point. So it's, you know, it's not them. So then they dig up Mercy. And well, there's different accounts. Some accounts say they dug her up. Some accounts say she was actually in a vault because she died in January. And we're talking about New England, you know, very cold, fierce winter. So either way, they get her body and they find her, and, you know, she's still in good shape. And so, of course, they say that they claim there's blood in her mouth and, you know, fresh blood in her running through her veins, and, you know, all the telltale signs. So they immediately build a pier on the spot, or pyre, however you say that, and they cut her heart out, burn it to ashes, and then they immediately they take the ashes and use that to concoct some sort of special drink that they take to George's house and give to the brother who's ailing, and then he passes away. So it was like, I don't know, a couple weeks later after he drank that, he passes away. And only the father was left after that. Now, there was a local doctor in town, and the entire time the doctor is telling them, this is a bad idea. This is not going to save him. It's, you know, but apparently because the doctor was not able to save these other people that were passing away, the rest of the town felt like, you know, he's full of it. We're not going to listen to him. So they kind of took matters into their own hands. It's a very well known case. Apparently in this time period, which again, it was 1892, which is not that long ago when you think about it. But apparently there was roughly about 100 of these cases in New England, and like all of New England, not just, you know, this area. But Mercy Brown is like probably the most well known. She's kind of famous, and you can still see her grave. It's even on Find a Grave. I have it pulled up. She's buried at Chestnut Hill Cemetery in Exeter, Washington County, Rhode Island. So I thought that was interesting that, you know,
interesting
that kind of hysteria took over in, you know, what I mean, it was, you know, it's over 100 years ago, but still it's not that long ago, right? Yeah. So, okay, so that was Mercy Brown's tale. Now, this one is what really intrigued me. I found a book that was written in 1950, and it's called Expellees Tell Tales, Partisan Blood Drinkers in the Cultural History of Violence After World War II. So this book was written, you know, basically right after World War II. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read you guys just a couple paragraphs out of this little excerpt, but I thought it's just fascinating. And this was the author, her name is Monica Black. All right, so it goes like this. This article examines stories told after 1945 by ethnic German refugees from the Banat region of Yugoslavia about encounters they had with partisans, fighters in Josip Broz Tito's army who had become vampires. The essay situates these tales firmly within their place of origin and views them as an idiom through which Yugoslavian Germans described wartime acts of, encounters with, and anxieties about violence. This idiom had diverse cultural roots and was inflected by memories of partisan warfare in World War I, as well as by gender, religious culture, and local folklore surrounding blood. Though a contextualized reading of stories about blood-drinking partisans, the essay offers a window onto a psychology of violence and its legacies in the wake of war, and makes a plea for taking fantasy and the monstrous seriously as objects of historical analysis. Okay, so in this is more on the actual battle. It says, in the time of battle, the partisans drink no water, no wine, or schnapps, only blood. After World War II, ethnic German former inhabitants of the Yugoslavian Banat region, often referred to as Danube Swabians, or some German word, Donnerschwaben, I think, recalled chilling encounters they had with, quote, Tito partisans who had become vampires. When provoked in particular ways or even for no reason at all, Swabians reported the partisans, members of the multi-ethnic communist revolutionary and insurgent fighting force led by Josip Broz Tito during the war, would suddenly froth at the mouth and fall into terrifying, demonic, and convulsive states, which could only be ameliorated by drinking blood. And Swabian blood was their favorite.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
That's really crazy.
Hmm. Yeah.
Dang, Tom.
I wanted to read more, but that's as far as I got. And then on a final note, this one's great. there is an antiques dealer named Jack Mord, who believes that he has solid evidence that Nicolas Cage is a vampire. And he,
yes.
He has a photo taken during the Civil War, shows a man from Tennessee who looks shockingly like Nicolas Cage. And he really does. I mean, the resemblance is just it's spot on, right? So Jack Mord said he swears, he's adamant that it's a conspiracy, that Nick Cage is a vampire. And every 75 years, he reinvents himself and switches occupations. So there you go. The proof
I'm here for
is
it.
In the pudding.
I'm here for it. I am here
now, see,
for vampire Nicolas Cage.
If we didn't know who his family was, I think that's more believable than a lot of the other people who said they're vampires. Because if you're not going to come out and, like, you know, show us your cool powers, then you don't think you'd talk about being a vampire at all.
Right, right.
If you're afraid of being persecuted, you wouldn't talk about it.
Right.
Right, yeah. You just hide in the shadows. And
That makes more sense to me.
Right.
See, I'm not against this entire theme. Just either be loud and be proud or hide in the shadows.
True.
Right.
True.
The middle ground doesn't make sense to me. I love those stories.
Well, that's because you're Tito's not a vampire, Bill.
I read that before, and that is so crazy. That is so neat.
Right?
Maybe it's because you're not a vampire.
Or at least I don't brag about it.
He has a point.
I think I even like to lay down like I'm dead while we talk. I don't have much more on this, really. Besides, if people noticed, the difference between a vampire story from a few hundred years ago and now is there's a lot more detail in the stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's more fleshed out what their weaknesses are. If you think about it, the vampire stories pre 1819, maybe even 1860s, you knew they could die, but you really didn't know much. Or maybe cut off their head and burn the body, but there wasn't much detail to it. Besides, of course, the rice throwing OCD issue. But there's no talk about sunlight in most versions.
Right.
Now, as of Bram Stoker, sunlight's a weakness.
Right. Now that I'm thinking about it, I find it interesting that we talk about, vampires and the undead and they live forever. For people that can live forever, they sure have a ton of ways that they can die.
They do. And you know what, though? We didn't really talk about the movies at all, but that's because, folks, if you've never watched a vampire movie. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. The only recommend is if you never saw Nosferatu, which is a silent film from the early 1900s, go see it. There's talks of a remake being made soon of it, actually.
Yes, I've heard of that.
I recommend that one. I recommend the old monster movie, Dracula movies.
Mm-hmm.
If you like a lot of blood and gore, I recommend the Hammer Films vampire ones.
Mm-hmm.
Hammer Films were very dark and bloody.
We don't recommend Twilight.
I said vampire movies.
I do recommend The Lost Boys.
Lost Boys.
That's where it's at.
I recommend The Lost Boys, 100%.
That's where it's at.
I recommend Leslie Nielsen's Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Yes.
It's so cheesy and horrible. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
What other vampire movies would I recommend?
The Blade Trilogy.
Oh, the Blade Trilogy?
Of course,
Underworld.
Of course.
I'm also looking forward to Blade entering the MCU.
Mm-hmm. I cannot wait.
That's going to be amazing.
I don't want to spoil it for any of you guys, but they didn't show him, but he's already talked in one of the movies.
Oh.
He's in a post-credit scene.
Interesting.
Todd, you really didn't know that?
No. Although...
I'll tell you off the air which one to watch.
Okay, yeah.
Uh-oh.
I
don't want to ruin it for anybody.
Feeling, I know. But anyway, there's also From Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that one.
If
you love vampires and you love boobs, watch Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes.
Have you guys ever watched or read Let the Right One In?
No, I don't believe so.
So it's a Swedish it started off as a Swedish novel, then it was made into a Swedish movie. And then
that's so scary.
I don't know that it's that scary, it's kids. That's what's interesting about it is it's a kid.
Kid killing you doesn't sound scary at all, huh?
Well, what's scary is how the kid becomes a vampire. And even then, it's not necessarily scary. It's just gross. It's really good, though. It's really well written. I really enjoy the book. I've never seen the American version of the movie called Let Me In, and I kind of refuse to because I like the premise of the book, and the American version kind of changed it so that there could be more of like a romance. It's unnecessary,
right?
It's very unnecessary because that's kind of the point of the book is talking about love, but it's platonic love. It's not romantic love.
Sure.
So highly recommend that book. Very good.
There's always the Anne Rice books and movies. Like,
oh yeah,
we mentioned them briefly. Highly recommend the Anne Rice
feel like, in many ways, Anne Rice is really who helped bring vampires into like our romantic imagination, and that's why there's so much vampire werewolf.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trash now.
She was huge though, and again,
she was totally.
If you've read the books, like the books are amazing. You know, the movies are okay, but the books are just
books are better.
So amazing.
Yeah, the books are so much better. But I like, you know, her she stopped before she died. She did.
She became a major Catholic.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. At the very end. But she left again. Did you know that?
I thought she left again and became Catholic again at the very end.
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
There's so many rumors on that entire situation. It's so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, my understanding was she was Catholic, she quit, she began again, that was when she stopped writing, and then she quit again. I think she still considered herself a Christian, but she didn't claim the church.
Makes sense.
Too much hypocrisy, which totally makes sense.
Now, other good vampire movies I'd recommend, like Fright Night.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That was always scary when I was a little kid.
Didn't the Mummy, wasn't there vampires in one of those, or am I?
Not that I remember.
What am I
thinking? My favorite vampire movie as a kid.
Queen of the Damned. I don't know why I'm thinking of that.
Yes,
but.
Which is Anne Rice.
Yeah.
I love that one.
So good.
A great vampire movie for kids is Monster Squad.
Yes. Yeah. I personally was a fan of Hotel Transylvania.
I don't know if you know this.
That's
the Werewolf
cute series.
Has nods. The Wolfman has nods. Anyone who's watched that movie? That's one of my favorite lines as a kid. And do you guys ever see Stephen King's Night Flyer?
Mm-hmm.
No.
That's a great but very bloody vampire movie. I think it's some other ones I liked. I'm not that big into vampire movies, actually. I like werewolf movies better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Johnny Depp actually has a vampire movie. He did one called Dark Shadows, which is based on a soap opera from the old days.
Yes.
The soap opera from the old days started out as a regular soap opera, but they weren't doing that good. So they decided to introduce the supernatural with vampires and witches. And the vampire named Barnabas. And it actually became very popular. It became a cult classic. They brought it back in the early 90s. It didn't do that well. But then Tim Burton did a vampire movie, which I don't know if you guys know this. Tim Burton took a risk with this one, and he used his wife and Johnny Depp in it. Because he thinks they're the only two actors and actresses in Hollywood. But it's actually kind of funny. It's a new take on it. I loved it. It's so stupid. It's great. I recommend the movie Dark Shadows.
Yeah. Yes.
And once again, the TV show, What We Do in the Shadows. Oh, you never seen it, Todd?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, it's funny. I think it's on HBO.
It is funny, yeah. Enjoyed it.
Okay, the other good ones. Oh, and there's two good vampire shows in the 90s. Let me see.
Mm-hmm.
Forever Night was one of them. Because I watched that one. I want to say the vampire's name was Nick at Night. I'm not joking. I'm trying to remember the other one. I actually own these on DVD, I bet you.
Just stop wearing.
Yeah, no, his name was Nick Knight. He's an 800-year-old vampire who worked the graveyard shift in Toronto as a homicide detective.
Nice.
Dude, Forever Night rocked. And Hayden Christensen was actually in it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the other one was called Moonlight. You guys ever watch Moonlight?
No.
It only lasted for one season, but they always replayed it at night. But a private investigator called Mick St. John. And his Coraline was the female vampire that made him, and she's pretty much based on Carmella. I'm trying to remember that. I think that's a Canadian show that's like Forever Night. I'm almost positive. No, it's actually American. It only lasted for 16 episodes. Look it up, though, because it actually was pretty good. I have no idea why it got canceled so quickly. See, I guess I have watched more vampire stuff than I thought I did.
Yeah. All right. Well, y'all got any shout outs?
JL on Twitch. JL_1.
What's it?
Mm-hmm. Hold on. Who's on right now, actually? When I get off of here, I'll get on and watch him probably.
We've got Mandy over at Monster Bob Decals. Find it on Etsy. Use the code STRANGE for 10% off your order. She has our shirt available on her Etsy. You can buy it. It's got the lantern. It's got Bigfoot. It's pretty awesome. Please go support her.
She's got some
And I'm an idiot. It is JR1_live. See, I'm just out of it tonight. I don't know what's wrong.
Oh, JR1_live. Okay. And then one more thing. If you want a handmade hammock or hammock accessories over at
propane and propane accessories.
Bill's friend over at Marnock Outdoors is offering 10% off until the end of May. If you pay in full, he will make you handmade a hammock or hammock accessories. You get 10% off with the code Uncle Billy Toe Shoes. Just find him on Facebook, send him a message
over to his
page. Andy's stuff is really cool. It definitely makes me want a hammock.
Yeah, same.
It really is nice. It's most comfortable hammock in Harvest Shannon.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Bill tested him out. Bill's in our little picture on Facebook of it.
Yes. With no toe shoes. I don't wear toe shoes anymore.
We keep trying to get Keen to send us some, but here we are.
Well, Vibram. Vibram makes the best.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I meant Vibram. Keen is just, I'm tired, guys.
I'm not sure what Keen is. I know.
Keen's another, like, outdoor shoe company.
I think we all got thrown off since it seemed like we were all having different lags at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Yay, internet.
It was weird looking at our faces.
Yeah, we tried something new tonight, and we don't like it.
Yeah.
We're so used to not looking at each other while we talk. Right? Now we can't do it. Because we're great at adaption.
I don't know that we interrupted each other less. Maybe a little bit, but no, I feel like it still happened.
Well,
I feel like you two did better.
Well, you're laying down.
We can see you.
What did I say? What did I say? I said you two did better.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, because we're looking at each other.
I can still see you guys perfectly fine. You guys just couldn't see me.
Right.
Which was the problem?
No, you guys did not. You guys did not interrupt me at all, really, either. Besides lag. I was saying I'm bad at interrupting people.
I felt like I kept interrupting you.
No, you didn't.
But that's just because I like interrupting you.
Now. But no, it was just lag. I think maybe we should give it another try. See how we like it. See how the fans like it. Maybe we'll do a topic that's not as odd as talk about modern vampire stuff, which we all know about.
Yeah.
But we felt like it needed closure. Excuse me, folks. And we're going to try to discuss something that we're going to do for you guys next. We have an idea.
We do.
But technically, it's not done yet. Mm-hmm. Like literally, the story's not done. So we can't decide on it yet.
Reporting to you live from Stranger Happenings.
That's right. So if anyone has any ideas, please start giving us your ideas again.
Cryptids
or UFOs or USOs. I got some strange stuff. I'm going to suggest them once we get off the air tonight.
I want to talk about. Jack Parsons.
Yeah, we can do weird people. I would love to cover Jack Parsons and Crowley.
Me too.
I would love to cover them. Maybe we do those next. People, let us know what you want. What more funny, less funny? Let us know what you like. We're not going to do it, but we want to know what you like
tonight.
We did not laugh as much tonight. I think we were tired today.
I think we were.
Yeah.
The weather's been going back and forth for one, and it's just been a long week.
Work's been busy.
We'll catch Bill in his boxers next week, and some more.
I'll flash you my ass once we're done. That's no problem.
One morning, we're going to wake up at like 6 a.m., and it'll just be a picture of Bill's ass.
You guys should know that we talk really
early in the morning. We start really early.
We usually start talking around 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Which is no reason why it's hard to laugh. I've talked to these guys all day. We've already had like 800 jokes today.
Yeah, we do. We're like 15-year-old girls. We literally talk around the clock. We joke and tease each other.
As an almost 40-year man, can we not use the word 15-year girl in explaining me? I kind of feel like the police at my door.
Okay, we're all 21-year-old. I don't know. It makes me sad when I hear my adult friends talking about how lonely being an adult is, because I'm lucky and I have you guys to talk to. So.
Yes, you guys are
awesome. Thank you for being a friend.
Anyway.
thank you for stop singing.
So,
anything else, you guys?
All music and sound effects are supplied by Zapsplat.com. Our link is in the show notes. Go check them out. They got some cool stuff going on.
I put a link to our shirt in the show notes, too.
Yes, so. And we'll have more energy next time. Yeah. I'll drink some blood or something. I'll come back as it reforms. Oh my god, guys, it's
we're
true.
Going to start our own vampire coven. Sorry, I guess we're gonna form a coven.
We're gonna start a cult.
Vampire coven.
That's too much work. If we're gonna start a cult, we're gonna start one that doesn't require me like doing that kind of shit.
Yeah,
I'm all for starting a coven or cult. But not when that makes me drink blood.
Yeah, we don't really want to be in one where we
how about a wine coven?
People,
do we have a wine coven?
Oh, I like that. Yeah,
it works for the blood of Jesus.
Anything?
So why not?
Yeah,
right.
We can say anything we want. We can say that we need wine to live. Yeah, we get a lot of wine moms.
Our friend Roxy says that.
Yeah, I was gonna say I know a few people that live by that motto.
Wine is life.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
All right. Keep it strange, y'all.
See ya.
Keep it stranger. Bye, friends.
What are you still doing?